second, a goal to go from the Atlanta 2. James White will set behind Brady. We'll move under center. Trips to the right. Bennett to flat end left. Second and goal to go from the 2. Toss sweep right for James White. Cuts it up with the right arm. Cuts it upfield. Driving forward. Diving to the goal line.
It's the right
touchdown. And a title for the Patriots.
I can't believe it.
They have completed the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. Led by the greatest quarterback.
Look at Brady.
In Super Bowl and NFL annals. Silver trophy is coming back to New England.
On the call, New England's Patriots radio of James White's touchdown. His third of the game and the last play of Super Bowl 51, the first overtime game in Super Bowl history. Good morning and coming to you live from the Fox Sports studio in Las Vegas. I'm Brian Feldman and this is Out of Line. We are here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 on Fox Sports 1340 and streaming at lvsportsnetwork.com. Joining me in studio is future Nevada Hall of Fame producer, the one and only Magnum. You can follow us on Twitter at Adeline 1340 AM. And please check out, like, and follow our Facebook page, which is called Adeline. That's OUTTALINE. Without you, there is no reason for us to do the show. So by all means, pick up the phone and be heard. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
It is time for What's on Tap. Pouring out, thanks to Bubby's University. We'll start by downing some post-Super Bowl 51, and Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and James White are all on the menu. Then,
what about the fact the Lions have never won in Washington before? The Redskins have won, I think, 14 in a row against you guys. All this history. What do you say to that?
Tomorrow's a new day, you know, and next Sunday is going to... We're not part of the old Lions. We're not part of, the Redskins aren't part of the old Redskins that beat the Lions every year. This happens to be a new part of the season, even though we went down there and got whacked pretty good the first game. We're a completely different team, and we've got something to prove, I think.
Well, good luck, I hope you.
The sound you just heard was part of a short-lived dream by Detroit Lions fans 25 years ago, right after the Lions won their only playoff game in the Super Bowl era. And keep in mind, again, we just watched Super Bowl 51. For those of you still unfamiliar, that is one playoff win for Detroit in 51 years. The man who played a huge role in that win was former NFL quarterback Eric Kramer. After the first break, Eric Kramer will be joining the show. And aside from being a Detroit legend, he is also the owner of a very compelling and unique story that ultimately resulted in a new lease on life. Plus, I have a connection with Eric that even he doesn't know about, and I have kept secret since the playoff win 25 years ago. Today, I will be letting that cat out of the bag. Also on tap, UNLV basketball is not in a good way, and Bernie Fratto will be chiming in. Bernie's the host of the UNLV basketball postgame show, Rebel Extra, heard after every game on our sister station, ESPN 1100 and 100.9 FM. I now get the privilege of being Bernie's co-host on Rebel Extra, and together we will give you the cliff notes of yesterday's show and discuss the puzzle that is the 2017 Runnin' Rebels.
I tell you what, let's just start with questions. I'm a little perplexed by the puzzle that is the Rebels.
Yeah, plus a special guest will put a different spin on this week's blazing. There's Fact This, and Adeline sponsor AllStarGiftBaskets.com is going to hook up one of today's listeners with a great Valentine's Day gift. On tap at Bubby's University, earn your degree in food, gaming, and spirits, where the only two majors are sports and good times. Bring your Rebel ID, and your first beer is free. You can enroll 24 hours a day. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information. So I want to start by saying the big problem with having a Sunday morning show is that almost all big events culminate on a Sunday or a Monday. The final round of all major golf tournaments are on Sundays. All the big NASCAR and IndyCar races are on Sundays. The national championship, college football, and basketball games are on Mondays. And, of course, the granddaddy of them all, the Super Bowl, is called Super Bowl Sunday. So I get treated to the greatest Super Bowl ever, one of the greatest games ever, considering the stage. And then I have to wait a whole week to talk about it on my show. I have to wait a whole week to argue with Magnum, and despite Joe Montana's assertion about Tom Brady not being the greatest quarterback ever, but the wait is over, and post-Super Bowl Sunday is here, so
I'm going to stop you.
Have at it.
It's not the greatest Super Bowl ever, because one team had a monumental collapse for the ages. To me, that doesn't make a quality game. A quality Super Bowl is like the Rams and the Titans, where it was back and forth the whole game. Quality Super Bowl, Giants, Patriots.
I don't know. I think
Ravens, 49ers.
Because, drama at the end, Magnum. But come on.
Drama doesn't. When you have one team just crap all over themselves and one coaching staff look like a Pop Warner coaching staff, that doesn't make a great game. Now, it's the greatest comeback in football history.
Well,
given the stage,
yeah. I mean, the Motor City Miracle was pretty amazing.
But I can't sit here and agree with you that it's the greatest Super Bowl ever, because one team wasn't great when it mattered the most. You know, it wasn't that the Patriots beat or came back against an Atlanta team that was playing that did everything they could to win the game. Atlanta did everything they could to lose the game. And to me, that doesn't set the bar for quality. Quality is a game that goes back and forth. It's in doubt. Once the Patriots scored that touchdown and got the two-point conversion, I knew they were coming back to win the game. There was absolutely no drama for me for the last 10 minutes of that game, because I knew that there was no way. I knew Atlanta was going to screw it up. And I started to get the feeling when they got the onside kick and went three and out following the onside kick, I bet the Patriots on my mobile app, because I knew they were going to come back and win the game.
It's good foresight if you saw that. I wasn't sure of anything other than the fact that the Super Bowl proved to me this. The two best teams in their respective conferences played in the Super Bowl. I don't think anybody could have given New England that kind of game, could have got up on them by 21 points right off the get-go the way they did. But here's the deal. We have seen some really good Super Bowls, and I'm going to grant you that. Great Super Bowls, but none topped Super Bowl 51, and here's the reason. It had everything you could hope for. You had a 25-point second-half comeback. You had the first-ever overtime. You had an unsung hero in James White. Three TDs and a two-point conversion. 20 points, a Super Bowl record by a guy that no one would have expected to do that. He had two rushing touchdowns coming into the Super Bowl. I mean, it had a little bit of everything. And the bottom line is, Mags, and this is what I'm saying again, okay, Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback ever. And I'm going to do this because you never responded to it, so I'm going to give you a chance to respond to this right now, because this is something that I sent to you the day afterwards, because I felt bad, but I wanted to try to give you my take on it, okay? And, you know, give you my take on as far as, you know, understanding what you were going through being a Jets fan. To me, it's like when the Packers win the Super Bowl. It's the way I feel, and I can understand and empathize. But here's what I said to Magnum, who was very bitter last week. And before the Super Bowl, Mags had some choice words to say about Brady. That for a minute, he said there's a lot of quarterbacks that were better. Then he says, held himself back. He said, well, John Elway and Joe Montana he would take. And here's what I said to him. Hey, brother, even though you were hating Tom Terrific yesterday, I saved you a seat on the Brady bus, as I knew one day you would have to sit in it. I love you, brother, and I remember back in the 90s, being a Piston fan, how much I hated the Bulls. But as much as I couldn't stand him, respect factor for Michael Jordan was through the roof. And Tom Brady is on that Jordan-esque plateau. He might not be as talented at his craft or as individually dominating as MJ. but he is without question to football what Michael was to basketball. The face of the sport, and without question, overall, its most valuable and recognizable player. And he's going to be 40 years old before he ever takes his next NFL snap in a real game and still plays with abilities very close to what he had in his prime. I absolutely love Joe Montana, John Elway, Terry Bradshaw, and several others that I heard about and saw highlights from before my time, like Johnny Unitas, Bobby Lane, and Slinging Sammy Baugh. But line them all up, and if Tom Brady isn't seriously standing in front, especially after Super Bowl 51, then you were electing to walk around with big fat blinders that have the word denial engraved in them. A great system, cheating, or deflated balls have very little, if anything, to do with Brady's success. He's too good. Every time that man steps on a football field, there are guys trying to disrupt the play or knock him down hard. It is a way to make a name for yourself if you're a defensive player. Everyone knows this and yet still can't stop him for 60 full minutes in big games. He's a freak of nature, the greatest ever, and he gets to sleep with Gisele Bündchen. Come to think of it, you're right. I blank hate him too.
Well, you know, I mean, and my response to that is it's hard to argue that he isn't, after last week, it's hard to argue that he isn't the greatest quarterback of all time. I mean, I sat there watching that comeback knowing that I was going to have to, at some point, and I did on Monday, go on the air and say he is the greatest quarterback of all time. And here's why I'll say that he is the greatest. As much as it pains me, and I would still love to say that Montana is the best, because, hey, Montana never lost a Super Bowl, but Tom Brady is a couple of freak plays away from being 7-0. In the Super Bowl, or you could look at it from the other side of it. He is two monumental coaching blunders away from being 3-4 in the Super Bowl. Because let's be honest, Seattle runs the ball, they win the game. It's a dead issue at that point. Atlanta runs the clock out, they win the game. At that point, it's completely dead. But
Carolina nearly beat him.
Yeah, and
they had him on the ropes for a minute.
And Donovan McNabb puked all over himself, and the Rams had, you know, well.
The Rams, but, I mean, every game's been close, and the Patriots have given
But the thing is, you never saw, yet Joe Montana had the drive. You know, John Elway had those two miraculous.
Joe Montana, also Magnum, in the very first Super Bowl he won, had a goal line stand where a no-name linebacker named Danny Buns made three tackles, two solo, that gave him the Super Bowl also. It's a different outcome.
My point is, every quarterback who is in the argument of being the greatest had their defining Super Bowl moment. To me, Tom Brady, up to that point, he didn't really have that defining. Sure, he won three games or four games, but a couple of them were because of other teams making mistakes. He really didn't have that defining moment. Now he's got that. He was down 25 points in the third quarter and came back and won.
I think that
defined his career, who he is, why he is the best. And I mean, I have to swallow the pill. As much as I cannot stand the Patriots and their bullcrap about the Patriot way, which is all a bunch of lies, what they've done in 15 years, you will never, ever see that again in the NFL.
Spectacular. And you know, speaking of Tom Brady, I was going to play it, but we don't have time. Last week I did say before the game, hey, I would take a 39-year-old quarterback right now. If all the quarterbacks give me any quarterback playing today, and I get to use anyone I want. I don't have to use Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. And I said before the game, the only guy I would even consider in the National Football League right now would be Aaron Rodgers. But I said it on the air last week. I would still take Tom Brady for that one game right now of any quarterback playing at 39 years old, and it is amazing what he's accomplishing at his age. I say I can't imagine another 2 years out of a 40-year-old body that's had reconstructive knee injuries. He's had off-shoulder problems on his off-throwing shoulder. I'll be shocked. But real quickly, I know we got to take a break. We got a lot to squeeze in today. Bill Belichick, man, he has now been to 9 Super Bowls, 2 as a defensive coordinator with the New York Giants, carried off the field. The only other defensive coordinator besides him to get carried off a field was Buddy Ryan with the Bears. Nobody's had the success of this guy. He has now 7 rings, there were two defining plays that I thought in Super Bowl 51 Magnum that shows you why Bill Belichick is the greatest coach ever. One of them nobody's even talking about, and it's this play right here.
David Gostkowski is going to come out for the Patriots and try a field goal. Remember, he's missed an extra point, and he will now attempt a 33-yard field goal, same distance as his last PAT attempt. Snap in the spot, kick lifted to the uprights, and the kick is good. So with 9:44 to go in the fourth quarter, the Falcons 28 and the Patriots 12.
And why is that defining, man? Think about it for a minute. I'm not going to dwell on it, but you should think about it if you're a sports fan. It is defining because how many coaches in the National Football League right there, you got 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. You're down 28-9, and you've got 10 minutes to go. You know you need two touchdowns with two good two-point conversions and a field goal. Right there, you're thinking, you know what? I got to get momentum. We got to get the touchdown right now. It's fourth and goal from just inside the 10-yard line. I am telling you right now that maybe two other coaches in the National Football League, because I got to put Jack Del Rio in there, he'd make that decision, would go for the field goal right there. And actually, Jack Del Rio would go for the touchdown. I'm 100% wrong. It's the opposite with him. But Bill Belichick showed his team that we're not done, we're not quitting, we're going to get one of the three scores we need right now and move on. And that was the first defining moment that shows why he is an unbelievable coach to make that decision. The second one was right here, and this one to me is obvious.
From the two-point try, Brady in the gun. White, the running back, will join Brady. High snap, and it goes on a direct snap, and it goes right to White, who takes it over the center and crosses the goal line. And the two-point conversion for New England on the direct snap to James White. Now we've got ourselves a ball game. It's 28-20. Atlanta's lead is 8.
How many coaches? Call me right now. Give us a call. You know the line. I've given you the number. 702-876-1340. We're going to be talking to Eric Kramer in a minute, but you want to tell me how many coaches would have called a direct snap to a running back that is known as a receiving back. A very good, over 500 yards and 5 touchdowns this past season receiving, James White. How many touchdowns does he have on the ground this year? 0. 166 yards rushing in the regular season. And a direct snap, you're going to put the ball in this guy's hands when you have to get 2 points to just get within a score with the clock completely working against you. And the Patriots and Bill Belichick agrees and says, yep, let's do a direct snap to James White and take the ball out of Tom Brady's hands there. I wouldn't have done it. If you would have told me before the game that was going to happen, I would have told you no way. But Bill Belichick did it because he knew not a soul was thinking that was what was going to happen. Absolutely brilliant play call, people. Give this guy his due. Bill Belichick, stamp his name on that trophy right now next to Lombardi. Matter of fact, I'm a huge Vince Lombardi fan. Some of his great statements over time. I wouldn't be opposed if you pulled his name off the trophy and put Belichick's name on it. That's how good I think Bill Belichick is. Unbelievable coaching decisions. He's made them for years, and they really came to life again in the Super Bowl. This guy didn't give up. He played to win. He pulled out every trick in the book, as he always does. So call it what you will, because Bill Belichick has manipulated the NFL rule book and found ways to bend those rules as much as he can to win games. Who doesn't? That's what great coaches do. Read and understand the rule book and the way you can get away with it. Listen, we got to take a break. On the other side, we will come back with my man, Eric Kramer. I can't wait to talk to him. Bernie Fratto a little ways down the road. And like I said, we got a special blazing for you today.
This was a day that Lions fans will never forget, and it will also be a day that Eric Kramer silenced the critics and proved he belongs in the NFL. One of the great comeback stories continued at the Dome today.
Are these the kind of days you dream of?
Yeah.
I mean, you were unconscious for a while, weren't you?
Yeah, things just worked out, and I've never felt better than this.
Have you ever seen Eric Kramer any better?
No, not really. Eric had a great game. Now quit doubting him, Bernie, okay? Eric had a great game. He knew what he had to do, you know, and he went out and did it.
I can say like this, they may not have known him then, but they definitely know him now. He had a definitely hot hand today.
That's understating the fact, but all week long, the Dallas Cowboys had talked trash about Eric Kramer, that he didn't belong in the NFL, that he was a scab quarterback. And that trash continued today on the field.
And their linebacker Del Rio was up at the line every now and then saying, Kramer, you're going to blow this game for them. And he proved them wrong.
One of the guys came over and said, Eric Kramer, you're going to lose this game today. And Kevin yelled at him, not.
But I'm sure Del Rio had some things to say to him out on the field. He kept coming off and said, Del Rio, I guess, what's up with these guys from USC? They talk trash all the time.
A lot of things have been said, not just this week, but before, here in town, and I'm just glad I was able to go out there and prove some people wrong.
Wouldn't you imagine the Redskins wouldn't say anything about Eric Kramer?
your
own teammates might yell things at you.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen out there. I just, you know, I wish this could never end, and in order to do that, we got to keep it going next week.
Joining the show, time favorite of mine, former NFL and CFL quarterback, Eric Kramer. When I say one of my favorites, I'm sure some of the listeners and maybe even Eric Kramer says, yeah, right. But to that I say, I was born and raised in southeastern lower Michigan, and I am a huge Detroit Lions fan, as most of you know, and former Detroit Lions radio network employee. You have delivered something that still to this day, 25 years later, no one else has been able to. A Detroit Lions playoff win. Eric, when you put that in perspective, 51 seasons and one playoff win, it almost doesn't seem possible, right?
No. When you put it in terms like that, it's unfortunate, actually. But, Brady just won his this Super Bowl, so it's just kind of, and I don't know how many playoff wins they've had, but it doesn't seem possible, but I guess that is the reality of it.
Yeah, the Houston Texans tripled their playoff total this year in the Super Bowl era, and they've been around for about 12 years. It's amazing. But Eric, before I start talking football and Detroit's short-lived glory days, I want to know how you're doing, man. I think most sports fans know the story, and I think I can speak for all of them when I say I am so incredibly happy that you got a second lease on life, man.
Oh, well, thank you. I certainly appreciate that. And I'm thankful myself, and every day I wake up, and I really, for the last year and a half, I have been just feeling great, and so I'm very thankful for that, and just grateful, and get up, and I've recently gotten married, and all is well.
I heard that, and congratulations, my friend. Listen, tell me about your football journey. Going from an undrafted replacement player in 1987 to Calgary of the CFL, and then after getting hurt, there you end up in Detroit for what I think most of us Detroit fans thought would be a cup of tea.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of encapsulates my little journey, and or not so little journey, and it was an unlikely, unscripted story that just took, some, I will say, stick-to-itness and many days and nights of just as long as there's a line to stand in, keep standing in it and until they kick you out. And fortunately, it took a while for them to kick me out.
I like it. The stick-to-itness, man. That is the greatest. Hey, listen. So Rodney Peete goes down, I think, the fifth game of the 1991 season. And at that time, even though you were listed second team on the depth chart, as a Lions fan, I thought, okay, time to let the rookie, our latest Heisman Trophy winner, who the year before had set the world on fire at the University of Houston, of course I'm talking about Andre Ware, it was time for him to take over the helm. But the Lions stayed true to their depth chart, and in comes Eric Kramer, and the rest is history. What was that like?
It was, in one word, it was fantastic that, that they would stick true to their depth chart, as you put it, and gave me an opportunity. And, I think I proved to them that over the course of preseason and the year before that I was at least worth a shot. And we did have a good season going on, and I just tried to do my very best, not to set us back. And, we definitely kept things going and had a what turned out to be a magical season and a great playoff win against Dallas. And actually, the game Rodney went down was against Dallas in a regular season game, which we turned out and ended up beating them that day as well. And so that was definitely one of the highlight seasons of my career. And, you know, I have to thank Wayne Fonts and that whole crew there and for believing in me and giving me a chance.
Eric, that was, for me, it was the greatest season of my life being a Lions fan. So like I said, for you, one of the great, man, it was unbelievable. I still tell people that I've gotten the opportunity and blessed to cover two Super Bowls so far. I've covered just about every kind of major sporting event from the U.S. Open in golf to you name it. I have never enjoyed myself at a sporting event more than that playoff game at the Silverdome against the Dallas Cowboys. I say to people that the only way to describe it was I felt like Uncle Fester, like you could stick a light bulb in my mouth and it would light up. It was electric. When you have 80,000 plus people going nuts, the hairs on my arm was standing up, and man, you just stood tall. It was awesome. And we're talking to former NFL quarterback Eric Kramer. Eric, as magical as that season was, it was a team fueled by tragedy. I'm speaking, of course, of offensive tackle Mike Utley, who was paralyzed in a game against the Rams a week before Thanksgiving, and his thumbs up leaving the field really seemed to rally both the fans and the team. And from that point forward, that team seemed to be on a mission.
Yeah, you know, we had, as you said, Mike Utley's tragedy, which, you know, he still lives with. I mean, that is a game changer in his life. And, but it also served, I think, as you pointed out, as, gosh, I don't know what to call it, but it definitely, I think, helped, unite us even further as a team and give us something deeper and more meaningful, I guess, to play for. And, like I said, we had some great leadership on that team. Lomas Brown, I think, and along with a lot of other vets on that team, kind of took control of matters and, you know, said, hey, we've got a higher purpose here. And somehow, some way, that carried us through what is a very long, you know, one NFL season is very long. It's not impossible, but it is a marathon race, and we were able to, you know, stay focused on what we were there to do, I think, in part because of, you know, like I said, this is Mike Utley's personal, you know, I don't know if, what to call it, but
like a mission, like his mission in life now has been, I got a chance to meet him out here at the NFL, the Gridiron Greats, and what a great guy and a cause and a purpose, and the positivity in his attitude made me feel bad. Like, I don't want to ever wake up feeling bad, man. When I look at Mike Utley and how positive he was.
Yeah. I think that sums it up really well. And it gave us something bigger than the game in front of us to kind of focus on, and maybe that was the reason we, you know, practiced harder, stayed longer, watched more film, did whatever it was that we did to put us in position to win. And it was a great team effort and a great season. And like you said, as a lifelong Detroit fan, we were able to give some pride to that city. And those are some memories I will never forget. Some friendships that were forged that I'll always have. And even with Mike, you know, we keep in contact and get together every so often. And you know, that's a very positive time in my life to look back on.
Unbelievable time on all of us. I said at the Tripe Fans, we're running a little bit low on time, and I was just going to mention that team. It was that team really, in retrospect, had some terrible luck in the final game of the season against the Jets. One of those veteran leaders you talk about, you lose Pro Bowl nose tackle Jerry Ball right at the end of the season to a knee injury, and then after the season, of course, that freak accident claiming the life of another great offensive lineman on his way to a great career in Eric Andelsack. A lot to deal with for you guys, and I remember it all very well. Okay, Eric. We are just about a time, and I've kept this secret for 25 years, and I'm not even sure if you remember it, but I always thought one day I would have you on a show I was hosting and let the cat out of the bag, and this is that show. In 1991, I was a young sports talk show host in Detroit. I covered the Lions on a fairly regular basis, and after you beat the Cowboys to advance to the NFC Championship game, I constructed a letter to you on my word processor and put it, in your locker at the Pontiac Silverdome, suggesting that you guarantee victory against the Washington Redskins. Thank God you didn't take my advice. By any chance, do you remember getting that letter?
Oh yeah, yep. That's that definitely brought a smile to my face. I'm glad you took all the precautions in the world and traced your steps and covered up your steps. And unfortunately now it's not just our little secret, but that was definitely a surprise getting that. I did contemplate it, but afterward, I thank my lucky stars that I didn't guarantee a victory. But that took a lot of guts on your say, and that was funny.
I wanted you to be the next Joe Willie Namath. That's all. I was just picturing Eric Kramer as the next Joe. You got this good-looking guy. We'll put you in some fur coats, and that's what I picture. Listen, Eric, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on my show. I know your sister lives out here in Vegas, and hey, my friend, any time that you can potentially make it out to Vegas or you come out here, please, by all means, you have my number. Text me. I'd love to have you in studio and on the show live. There's about 6 or 7 guys that work at this station that are actually from Detroit, believe it or not, that would love to meet you and feel the same way as I do about you, man. Thank you so much for coming on.
Okay, I'll consider it a date. We'll hook up.
You got it, my friend. That is Eric Kramer, former NFL, CFL, replacement player quarterback, man. One of my all-time heroes in Detroit. I can't tell you how happy and thrilled I am to have that guy in the show, and I know any Detroit fan out there listening right now, you can try to give me a call. We're running really low on time, but listen, we got to take a real quick break. Bernie Fratto, host of Rebel Extra post-game show for UNLV, is coming your way next.
I tell you what, let's just start with questions. I'm a little perplexed by the puzzle that is the Rebels.
Puzzle that is the Rebels. Up next, the man you hear all over sports talk radio in Las Vegas, my friend and the most generous man with his time in sports radio, Bernie Fratto. Bernie is the host of Rebel Extra, the caller-driven post-game show for Runnin' Rebel basketball, heard after every game on our sister station, ESPN 1100 and 100.9 FM. Bernie, I am honored and happy to now be sitting next to you on Rebel Extra for the remainder of the season, but I have to tell you, as the season wears on, what I'm seeing on the basketball court, Bernie, is getting harder to digest than the food served at every game in the Bob Bloom media room at the Thomas and Mack Center.
Well, you are backed up by pretty good evidence, Brian. Unfortunately, in addition to the 6-game losing streak, there's a whole series of numbers behind those results. They really tell the story. The Rebels rank last in multiple offensive and defensive categories in the Mountain West Conference, not the least of which is field goal percentage, three-point field goal percentage, they rank 343rd in the country in shots around the rim. They're like 51% in shots right under the rim. So when you add it up, they're offensively challenged, and defensively they struggle through great stretches as well. So there's really no mystery as to why the Rebels find themselves in the midst of a 6-game losing streak and with a 10-16 record. The Rebels, UNLV run a Rebel basketball program, has never lost 17 games in a season ever. So if they lose one more game, they'll be making history.
Well, they did make some history yesterday. A milestone, 1,000 straight games with a three-pointer if you want to try to find any kind of a silver lining. But, Bernie, I know you're not a Division I basketball coach, but you follow UNLV as closely as anybody. You come prepared and bring your A game to every broadcast. And now that I've buttered you up, put you in the oven and shut the door, what, in your opinion, would you do if you were Coach Menzies at this point?
Well, at this point, publicly, I'm going to continue with the positive narrative. I've said all along, Coach Menzies gets a hall pass this year. Now, let's define hall pass. It doesn't mean he has cradle to grave security. It doesn't mean you can't scrutinize his, you know, some of his decision making, and it doesn't mean you can't analyze the results. But what it does mean is I'm not going to allow this season to define whether or not Marvin Menzies was the right hire, can bring UNLV back to promises, or have success in the Mountain West Conference. There have been plenty of great coaches. Look at Bill Walsh, Coach K. I can name a dozen great coaches who had bad first or second years. But to answer your question directly, what I do is internally evaluate who is going to be around next year, who I can take into battle. I think there are a handful of serviceable players on this roster that will be part of future teams. At the same time, you're still trying to win games on the floor, and you're staying, and you don't change the fact you're trying to teach and develop a culture. The Rebels had three games in a row where they lost by 8 points. They played just well enough to lose. This group hasn't learned how to win yet. That's the difference, and you brought it up yesterday in the postgame show, and you're exactly right. San Jose State's not the same San Jose State team. They're 6-6. They've beaten New Mexico. They've beaten UNLV twice. They've beaten San Diego State. They're learning how to win those close games at the end, and you brought up another good point. They've got, you know, a couple of go-to guys in Brandon Clark and Ryan Welich. And at the end of the day, when they write the history books for this version of UNLV Runner Rebel basketball, who will have been that go-to guy, right? In the preseason, we thought it was Tyrell Green, who, by the way, had his best game of the year yesterday. But when conference started, he struggled. It might have been Chris Clyburn for a while. It might have been Christian Jones for a while. Certainly, Javon Mooring is in the mix. And let's not forget Jalen Poyser. What happened to him? But no one really established himself as the consistent alpha dog go-to guy when the game was on the line, like a Brandon Clark or a Ryan Welich for San Jose State.
He's Bernie Fratto, host of Rebel Extra, the UNLV basketball postgame show on ESPN Radio in Las Vegas. Bernie, looking at the remaining schedule and based on what we have seen, especially as of late, I asked you last night, and we got so bombarded with callers that I never ended up getting your answer. Is it reasonable to believe that this team might not win another basketball game this season?
Let's break it down this way. The Rebels have 8 days off. Right now, that looks like a good thing. Don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. So next Sunday, 1 o'clock, at San Diego State, the Rebels have struggled mightily to perform well in that building for many, many years, and that's when they've been good. I believe their last win there was when Anthony Bennett was a freshman. He was on the bench down the stretch. The other road games are at Air Force, so there are your three remaining road games. You have two home games, Utah State, who is not having a great year, but beat the Rebels by double digits at their place, and seem on paper more talented than San Jose State, who just beat the Rebels yesterday. And then, of course, the other home game, Reno, once again, on February 25th, the final matinee. You take a look at that group. I suppose if you had to pluck one out, you might say the best opportunity is Utah State at home, or an under 500 team. But you've got to make your case. I don't know how you make your case. I don't know what you base it on. I think there's a probability the Rebels don't win another game, and I'm not indicting them. I'm just saying that's where they are right now, because you have to tell me where is that performance going to come from, especially when it's pretty clear to me that the cumulative effect of all these losses has taken a huge toll, and I think serious doubt has been inserted. These kids are only human.
Maybe they'll get lucky and play Air Force in the buy-in game in the Mountain West Conference tournament and get a win there, Bernie. I don't see another
win. Fair.
And I'm saying that this season's a wash. We'll see what happens next year.
Well, actually, wait a minute. Hey, Brian, not to cut you off, pal. I'm glad you teased that. Here's why. Right now, the Rebels, again, maintain a stronghold on sole possession of last place, right? So they'll be an 11 seed. That means the 11 seed plays the 6 seed. Look down where the 6th seed is. They're not going to get an Air Force. They're not going to get an Air Force. They're going to get somebody much better than Air Force.
And maybe the team that that they just lost to yesterday might very well be their opponent in the first round of the Mountain West Conference Tournament. Bernie, as always, a pleasure having you on. And provided life doesn't throw up any errant three-pointers, I'll see you a week from today across the hall for the next edition of Rebel Extra. That's after the Rebels play San Diego State. And that is actually 1 week from today, a rare Sunday afternoon game. I'll see you then, my friend. As always, appreciate you joining the show.
All right, thanks a lot for having me on, Brian.
Absolutely. Bernie Fratto, host of Rebel Extra on ESPN Radio. And we got a special guest on the phone, don't we, Megs? We got him? It's time for Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 and North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. They have two happy hours every single day, and there is no place in America better for going for watching sports or for wings, beer, and sports. And, hey, I have had a request for 6 weeks. This guy has been blowing me up to get back on the show, and all he wants to do is Blazin'. And if you remember back from the summer, the Olympics, it is our good friend, Dreadlocks Gandhi. What's up, Dreadlocks? Oh, no.
Hello, Brian. It is good to talk to you again, man. It has been so long.
Gandhi, we don't have time for you to smoke today. We're running late on time. We need something Blazin'. What's Blazin'? You've wanted to do Blazin' for so long. Me and Magnum didn't even prepare one today. We're letting you take center stage. What is Blazin' in the world of Dreadlocks Gandhi?
That is easy, my friend. Tom Brady may have been the MVP of the Super Bowl, and James White may have been the unsung hero. But let's face it, the true Blazin' man is LeGarrette Blount. All you have to do is look at his last name, Blount. It is my product, man. He is truly Blazin'.
Are you saying LeGarrette's a client of yours, or does he just have the last name that makes him Blazin'?
Now you know we have had this discussion many times before, my friend. We cannot discuss my clients on the air, but I will tell you this. I have been in Detroit, your hometown, for the last month since they lost their 9th straight playoff game to Seattle. There are several very sad fans in Detroit that are purchasing my product. I am doing very, very well, man.
You found a good Detroit happy strand, did you?
Yes, I did, and this week I am going to Atlanta. Magnum said it best earlier in the show, the two boneheaded plays in the Super Bowl. The stupid coaches, Dan Quinn, not running the ball, and Pete Carroll not running the ball. The Patriots could have easily lost those games. But right now, the people in Atlanta, they really need my product, man. So I am heading there next. But Detroit has been very, very good to me.
Well,
Nine in a row,
if you want.
60 years since they have last won the NFL championship. I'm sorry to remind you, my friend.
It is 60 years, 1957. Very good. I like the fact that your memory is still intact, Dreadlocks. That's a great thing. And, hey, you know, the Georgia Dome is all done. Maybe they'll let you use it to put your product in for a couple of months till they rip the thing down.
That is a great idea. You know, the weather in Georgia is very nice during the wintertime. Unlike Detroit, man, I could grow lots and lots of my product.
Well, the Georgia Dome is a controlled environment. Listen, Dreadlocks, we appreciate it, man. You're Blazin'. I'm sure you probably got to run. When Magnum said that you had somebody, like somebody was on your tail?
That is Babylon right on my tail again. I do not know how they find me. I've got to go, man. But it is a pleasure to talk to both of you. We will talk soon.
As always, very appreciated. That is Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings at the 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Two happy hours every day. No place in America better for wings, beer, and sports than Buffalo Wild Wings. And that, again, is Blazin'. This. Welcome back to Out of Line every Sunday morning right here on Fox Sports 1340, 8 to 9 a.m. And a fact this, I give you a fact and I tell you this is my opinion. Here's a fact, ladies and gentlemen, and we discussed it earlier. Bill Belichick has been to 9 Super Bowls and has 7 rings. Tom Brady has been to 7 Super Bowls and have 5 rings. Magnum stated earlier, those Super Bowls, the ones they won, could have gone either way. Every single one of them, maybe except for the Eagles, could have gone either way. And the ones they lost, both the ones to the Giants, could have gone either way as well. But the bottom line is, they went the way they went. No player in NFL history has played in 7 Super Bowls. There's one other player that's got 5 rings. His name is Charles Haley. He actually won all 5 Super Bowls he played in with the San Francisco 49ers and the Dallas Cowboys. But no one's played in 7, and there's surely no NFL coach with 7 rings.
A minute and 50
seconds. A minute and 54 seconds.
Besides Bill Belichick, that was Dick Vermeil. He's got himself a ring, coached in, I think, 3 Super Bowls. Won one, right? 2 with the Rams and coached in 1 with the Philadelphia Eagles way back in 1980. And he's got a ring, but nobody matches Belichick. The best ever. And if they do not put that man's name on the Super Bowl trophy when he retires, you don't have to do it while he's alive, although I think you should in honor of him, because he's only 64 years old. He could easily coach for another 10, 12, 15 years. But the trophy's got to at some point bear his name. And if it doesn't, I know New England, when he leaves, it'll be Belichick Field or Brady Stadium or something. You know that's going to happen. But the bottom line is, put his name on the trophy, man. Don't insult the guy. Lombardi was great. Lombardi was incredible. But Bill Belichick deserves to have his name there.
His name's not going to go on the trophy because it's just like the Stanley Cup. Are you going to put Scotty Bowman's name on the Stanley Cup? As you know, you're not going to rename the trophy. I mean, Vince Lombardi was an innovator. He was basically
when
the
Lord
reason
Stanley, who invented hockey, they were skating around in wooden states. Lombardi's not that old. He's not a pioneer in the National Football League from the teens, Magnum. That's why Lord Stanley, you don't change it. This was an original. Back when there were 6 teams in the National Hockey League, it took 8 games to win the Stanley Cup Finals. Everything has changed. The National Football League has changed. I'm not saying to take it off. Somehow you've got to have, then find another award. It can't be like the Bill Belichick MVP award. This guy is the greatest coach that ever lived, and his name should be stamped on a game that exemplifies who he is. He's coached in 9 of them. There's been 51. That is, what, a fifth of the Super Bowls Bill Belichick's been a part of? That is unbelievable. It really is. It's incredible. So, just putting into perspective, listen, we're out of time. I do want to say that I think it was absolutely horrible what I saw in Oklahoma City. A, it's competitiveness. You know, don't boo Kevin Durant because he wanted to go win a championship and because he can't play with ball hog Westbrook, for God's sakes. I mean, the bottom line is, It was insane. I'm listening and booing. But listen, we're out of time. This is out of line. We're here every Sunday again, 8 to 9 a.m. We'll be back next Sunday, Fox Sports Radio, 1340. I want to thank Eric Kramer. I want to thank Bernie Fratto. As always, I want to thank my future Hall of Fame producer, Magnum. And we got to thank Good Luck, or Dreadlocks Gandhi, for hitting us up with Blazin'. Again, we're out of time. It's out of line. I will see you next week.
Thank you for your understanding, and I want to thank the crowd tonight, the people of Las Vegas who were here. And